This is W2TTT, Whiskey 2 Tango Tango Tango. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or prairie traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, that's a good answer. Okay, this is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net meets weekly on the 146-955 repeater in Alpine, New Jersey, owned by the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. The net is a Bergen Amateur Radio Association function, and we are guests on the repeater, as we are virtually on all repeaters we use for our nets. And we encourage the club members to support the Bergen County FM Association, as well as the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. Speaking of which, there's a barra auction at 1 o'clock, or actually auctioning starts at 1:30 on Sunday. And the Chestnut Ridge breakfast, or brunch, which is their annual meeting, is at 11:30. So some of us are going to be going from one to the other. In any case, we have a lovely net tonight. This net is about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the natural phenomena, the science that underlies all this stuff, how we apply and use our amateur radio skills. Anecdotes are welcome. Sharing experiences, both recent and past, with an idea of perhaps rekindling some interest in some aspect of amateur radio that you found interesting is always a welcome thing. Those come under comments. You can also have a question. And you also can have a swap and shop or for sale item. So we encourage you to check in if you have any of those things, and even if you don't, because we like to focus our topics, you know, in a way that gets you to participate. So, with no further ado, let's start with the call signs that begin with the letter alpha. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, for sale or swap item, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
AC2GI, Rich, two questions.
Good evening, Rich. Welcome back from your Central Jersey foray, which I guess is your normal routine, or maybe it's West Central or Northwest Jersey. I'm not sure which, actually. Very good. Any other alphas? Alrighty. How about the Novembers? Alright, I'll get to Echo Link in a minute, just so everybody knows. We'll have a special talk about that. Alright, any stations whose call signs begin with Kilo?
E2EIR, none of the above.
Hi, Howie. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos?
And this is K2ZO. I have a question and a comment. Nothing important, but we'll see if anybody can help me.
Good, James. Good evening. Any other Kilos?
KD2DKN, Kurt, and I have a question.
Good evening, Kurt. Alrighty. Any other Kilos? Station, who is on the repeater? Try again.
CRB, Stu, I have a question.
Okay, KD2CRB, good evening, Stu. Got your question noted. And any other Kilos?
K2AMI, Tony.
Hey, Tony, what's your preference tonight?
I just have one item for sale. If we're going to do any for sale items, I would like to do that.
Absolutely. We are hawking for that. Very good. Any other stations with kilo call signs. Alrighty. Last call for kilos.
AC2UNH, all comments and questions.
Okay. KCTUNH, good evening, Paul. So no questions, no comments. Gotcha. Alright. Any other kilos? Alright. Whiskies.
72JEK, Don with a comment.
Evening, Don. Got your comment noted. Any others?
Whiskey 2, Lima, Charlie, November, or W2LTN, name is Rick. No questions, no comments, just listening.
Evening, Richard. Good to hear you as well. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Thank you, Charlie. Good evening to you as well. Any other whiskeys? Okay, any call sign anybody late other than Echo Link? I'll get to Echo Link next, I promise. Anybody locally on the repeater, any call sign? Please call K2BAR. Okay, anybody on Echo Link? Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, K6JTT, San Diego.
Evening, Nestor. Welcome aboard. Any questions, comments, or for sale or swap items?
No questions and no comments for now. K6JTT, thank you.
Okay, Nestor, very good. Well, thank you for checking in. Are any other stations on Echo Link? Alrighty. Well, there we go. Let's start with W2JEK, your comments, sir, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR and the net W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Just announcing that the next Bar VE test session will be on Friday, March the 15th at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. Anybody's interested, we'll be there giving the tests. Back to net, W2JEK.
Hey, very good. Don, anybody have any questions or comments for Don regarding either this test session, other test sessions, or testing in general? Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie. Well, there's our answer, I guess. Thank you, Don. Any follow-ups you want to add?
Nothing at this time. Thank you. Back to that. W2JK.
Roger, roger. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's see. K2ZO. Let's take your comment first and then your question.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Good evening, everybody. I've been fooling around here with a couple of little projects, and I thought I'd just comment on it. When using my Kenwood on field day, or portable day, you need to punch the front panel to call up one of the messages. There are three messages that can be stored if you have the optional card. And unfortunately what happens is that a lot of people who are unfamiliar with the radio tend to hit other buttons, or they hold a button too long and erase the message. So what I did is look at the MC-47 microphone, which of course has buttons on it, if you've ever seen one, and I emulated that in a little box which plugs into the 480. So now I have a little box with a couple of push buttons on it, which allows me to pull up the memories. Now when you do that, you don't run the same risk of accidentally erasing it or hitting more than one button at a time. So I did that little project this week and got it working, and it's real fine. If you have a Kenwood, download the MC-47 schematic and you'll see how I did it. It's just a couple of resistors across a couple of pins on the a mic connector, and very easy to implement that. But it worked out very good. I was very pleased with it. And it'll be a lot easier to do it on working on a field day. Let me let it drop. Okay, Okay, my other project has been interfacing a couple of different things to an ICOM antenna tuner. And I've managed to come up with a little box to do that, to remotely control it, even though you don't have an ICOM. And it's very simple to do. You just need a couple of contacts and a little switch and something. However, my problem is I was trying to use the Kenwood interface. Kenwood interface from the Kenwood to the Kenwood AT300, which I don't have, and I have no intention of buying, appears to be much more complicated. Much more complicated than anything like an ICOM or anything like a SGC, which are very similar in the way they work. Has anybody looked at or discovered what they're doing? It appears to do some kind of handshaking before it allows you to use it. What I was trying to do was, of course, to dummy up a circuit to make it use this other antenna tuner. But it's got me baffled. But apparently all of the remote Kenwood tuners work the same way. And they apparently go into some kind of a handshaking mode that you can't seem to duplicate too easy by just kind of grounding this and putting a voltage on that. Back to that, K2ZO.
Does anybody know if the Kenwood antenna tuners, remote antenna tuners, use cat commands? That would be the other thing that comes to mind. Do they have a dedicated cat command string, perhaps?
From what I can see, there's a little 6-pin connector, and apparently when you plug the thing in, it senses the fact that you're drawing current, and then it sends a signal out to it, and then sends it back, and whatever. The reason I will not use an AT300 from Kenwood is, for some reason, since it's only a 100-watt tuner, when you plug it into the Kenwood that I have, which is a 200-watt 480, it reduces, believe it or not, it reduces it to 100 watts. So that's out of the question. But I've been trying to find the protocol, what it does on that connector, and no, it does not use anything else as far as I can see. Back to that.
That's interesting. Jim, would the use of my 4-channel oscilloscope help? I've got a 144-meg or 150-meg scope, 4 channels, and I've got enough probes to beat the band. Do you want to, you know, maybe put something on a bunch of the pins and see what it does when you start pressing buttons and plugging it in and such?
Well, maybe that's what I'll do next, but I'm sure that I can find some information somewhere. I've looked at the AT300 book, nothing. And the Kenwood, the manual, nothing. Whatever comes out is pretty fast. I've yet to see it with a meter. But it's got me baffled, and I don't have any idea why they would make it so unique and so difficult when everybody else has pretty much standardized on the SGC type, where, you know, you've got two wires that bring power. One brings a contact closure when it's tuning, and one you make a contact closure to make it tune. Couldn't be any simpler. That's what ICOM does, and that's what SGC and most of the world does. But Kenwood does something weird. Back to that.
Yeah, I've never seen that. That's interesting. Has anyone else, I'm just watching the devil game here, where the devil's got pushed through the net crossbar, and the net is now lodged against the board. Anyway, sorry. I don't know if anyone else has seen this. I've never used the Kenwood remote tuners. I've only used the inboard tuners. And I'm kind of wondering, do they use the same interface, but just internally? You know, maybe with a different connectorization, because it's an internal cable. Maybe the same, actually. Who knows? But I'm kind of curious to what you've seen in the past. Again, if you would like, give me a blast on the phone, and I will bring my 4-channel scope and a big ball of probes. You can borrow it for the week. I'm going to be in San Ramon and San Francisco most of next week into next weekend.
No, not yet. Actually, I think I can do it with the 480. The 480 has a unique function. That is a contact closure with a resistor of 22K will give you a function that you can program, like off that microphone with the buttons on it, which is a tune function, and you can program the amount that comes out, 20 watts or so. That same button I can parallel with an antenna tuner like the SGC or the ICOM, and it'll initiate the tuning. So, but it's unique to that particular 480. The 480 has that other function. My other Kenwoods don't have that function, so I'm still trying to figure out how to do that, but perhaps I'll find some information somewhere. I've searched the internet, and it seems that a lot of people have asked the same question, but nobody's put an answer out. Back to that.
Yeah, while we've been talking, I've been searching here, too, and, man, that is a head-scratcher. Let me just throw it to the net one more time. But I like your microphone project, by the way. That's very cool, your pseudo-microphone project. I really like that. You know, I'm wondering, the TH series handy talkies, the modern ones, all have the ability to use that three-button device from a three-button microphone that little like lapel mic for the HTs. And I'm wondering if the circuitry for that is similar, you know. And I should probably take a look at that, because I think I've seen that. And while I don't have those microphones anymore, that would be a really handy thing for controlling a radio, especially after, you know, a software reboot. Not a software reboot, but like a, if you're unsure what state it's in, you can kind of bring it to a known state real quick by having an equivalent button push that's, you know, synthesizing what happens on the microphone. That's pretty cool.
I don't think that's the same for some reason. But the later series Kenwoods all seem to have this functionality where you can build yourself a box and put a between pin 3 and pin 4, which are the up-down pins. Okay, the contact closure run, one gives you up, one gives you down. But instead of putting a contact closure, you either put a 22K or a 100K resistor, and now you have two other additional functions. Kind of interesting, and it works well. Back to that.
That sounds great. That sounds absolutely delightful. Alrighty. Well, we will see what gives. That would be a very cool thing. Alright, let me... We'll see what happens. I'm going to look around. I don't think the handy talkie protocol is the same at all, but I seem to remember at one point seeing a schematic for the handy talkie speaker mics and had something similar going on for the function button. So I really should probably do that, because trust me, there's not a lot of intelligence in those microphones. They, you know, it's all done in wiring, and the intelligence is built in the radio. K2ZO, any other things? K2BAR.
That's it.
Well, Jim, thank you for sharing that. That's pretty cool. And I think at this point, we'll go to, we'll go to Stu, I guess. Stu, you'll try that. Stu, your question, KD2CRB, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KD2CRB. Yeah, good evening, everyone. I got my nose into the general study manual and punched it away there. Came across a thing called DX beacons. I was just curious if that's sort of used for calibration or just what the what might they be used for, Fentanet?
Particular, were you looking at the 20-meter ones?
Yes, that'd be the 20 meters back to net.
Okay, so there is a worldwide beacon network, and the way it works is each station has an appointed time slot in which to transmit. And they transmit on, in CW at decreasing set of power levels, and they're precisely timed so that you can anticipate not just in frequency but also in time and in power what, you know, signal levels you're being exposed to. And if there's propagation, you can then make a judgment as to how good the propagation is to that part of the world. So it's very clever. Yeah, it'll give you some accuracy and frequency, but you know, I would use WWV or CHU or something like that for frequency. But having done that, dialing up your radio on the worldwide DX beacon frequency on 20 meters, you will find that you will, you know, 20 meters open, you'll be able to listen for a period of time and start copying the various CW signals. So they just go in a rotation.
Okay, yeah, that pretty much explains it, or I think gives me a little better picture on the overall thing. Okay, KD2CRB, back to net.
Okay, very good. Anybody else have any comments or questions about the DX beacons or beacons in general in the amateur radio?
You, JK.
Don, go right ahead.
Hey, I got a thing here. It was printed on the internet, and it's the sequence of what these stations are, what frequencies they're on. 14100, 18.110, 21.150, 24930, and 28200. And it starts out with the United Nations for UN, VE8AT in Canada, and works its way through a list of stations. I don't know if these are all on the air. I don't know especially about United Nations. I haven't heard that in a while. I know they were doing some work up on the roof, but I don't know whether those were back on. But the other ones, sometimes you'll hear them. The last one on the list is Venezuela, YV5B. And it goes through, it takes about 3 minutes to go through the whole sequence. And then it starts all over again. And then at the 0 minutes it starts, and then 10 seconds later the UN start goes to the 18 megahertz, then it goes to 21 and 20 seconds after, and so on down the line. It's a whole, wait a minute, alright, it's on www.ncdxf.org/beacon/beacon schedule. So that's the event of 2006. Over.
Yeah, it's November Charlie Delta X-ray Foxtrot .org. Northern California DX Foundation. Northern California DX Foundation is what it stands for. .org/beacon schedule. Very good. Thank you, Don. Anybody else have comments?
To EIR, may I go back a little bit?
Sure, Howie.
Just register this so that I can I'd be in order rather than take time out now. But I have sort of an allied follow-up to K2ZO's Kenwood interfacing, and so I'd like to be put on the agenda when the time comes. K2EIR.
Just give me a second. Let's finish this. Sure. We can certainly do that. Anybody have any else? Any other questions about beacons? Let me just point out one thing. Beacons are really handy for determining propagation, not just on HF, but VHF, UHF, and microwave. They are the standard in making sure that you have a signal and or that you can hear a signal. There's, for instance, I think it's on 50.068 or 67, somewhere around there. You'll hear a very nice beacon in our area to the southwest on 6 meters. You hear a bunch of beacons from, what do you call it, 2 meters from, what do you call it, WA2UMX up near Albany, and of course the VHF group in eastern Pennsylvania that's very, very popular, W3CCX. You'll hear that on various bands as well. Just to give you a start, so if you ever need to know whether your antenna's working or whatever, those are good things to pardon me, to use. Anyway, that's pretty cool. Anything else on beacons before we move on? Alrighty. Thank you, Stu, for raising that subject. That was interesting. Howie, well, real quick, let's go back to what you wanted to follow up on Jim's topic.
Yeah, I think it's allied, but not directly relevant, although who knows, maybe there is something in common. I have a Kenwood TMV7 for my mobile rig. That's the dual-band VHF-UHF rig that they came out and no longer make. It was followed by the TMV71, I think. This one I have is the one that's notoriously called the blue screen or whatever. You could have either white on blue or blue on white. It uses, I think, the same microphone that K2ZO just mentioned. I think it's the MC47 hand mic. In any case, that mic has touch tone buttons and an up down button, one up button, one down button. And I bought a microphone on eBay a while back that was meant for the V71 apparently, and I thought it would be interchangeable, but it wasn't. It didn't really work. The up down buttons I think worked. Touch tone buttons did not. And apparently in the V71, what Kenwood did, let me let this reset, or at least looking at the manual, they specify one of the pins as data. And this is the data that transmits or causes to be transmitted to touch tones. I don't know what's going on between the microphone and the rig there. So basically, for lack of time, which is my usual problem, I put the microphone away and haven't gone back to it, so it's sort of been useless to me. So whatever it is they're using to communicate from the microphone to the rig is not the same as in my rig, where they actually send the touch tones on an audio on the line as audio. Instead, they call it data, and I'm not sure what is actually being transmitted. For all I know, and this is why I say it might be related, it may be the same way they transmit data to the antenna tuner. But at any rate, I'd like to find out how to make what I might have to do for conversion to make the V71 microphone I bought work with my V7. You know, if there's some simple relationship that I might be able to build something for. So we'll just throw that into the hopper with everything else. Thank you. W2TTT from K2EIR.
Interesting. So, looks alike, plays alike, doesn't actually play at all. Damn. Yeah, that's annoying. Any comments for Howie on his microphone dilemma?
This is K2ZO.
James, it's all yours.
Okay. Well, there was two things that I was discussing. One was the using the microphone to call up different functions. But the protocol that comes out of the Kenwood that talks to the tuner comes out the 4-pin connector, or 6-pin, I'm not sure, little Molex connector that says tuner. So that's where it's coming out there. The information on the
data and stuff like that is true. They do use a whole different setup on the VHF radios versus the HF radios, and that's why I'm surprised that a MC-47 could be used with that, because the MC-47, if you take a look at it, just do a Google on MC-47 schematic and you'll get it. All that is four push buttons that select a resistor, and it's a resistor value across the pins, either 3 or 4 to ground, that gives you 4 different functions in the HF radios, and I don't think it does that in the VHF radios. Perhaps it does on some, but I know that some of those other pins are dedicated to data. It gets confusing when you try to figure out what they did, and unfortunately the manuals don't tell you. Back to that, K2ZO.
Now, I gotta say, Kenwood and Gaysfield in particular are just ridiculous on giving information out on their interface specs. It's just annoying beyond belief. So, I sympathize with your frustration, Jim.
Well, as I say, it started out because I'm cheap, and I wouldn't want to buy the other antenna tuner since I already had the ICOM one. But that's the way habs are.
But more importantly, you got it to work on your other antenna tuner. It's just only on the one radio.
I did make a couple of contacts, and I actually have made it work. The only difference is that I have to press 2 buttons, one to get the radio to put out an RF signal, and the other one to get the thing to go into the tune mode, where if I can figure out what goes on out the back, I was going to try to make one contact closure, one button, do both. So we do it the other way.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could gate it so that when you press one button, you get 2 for the price of 1, or heck, use a double pole switch, right?
Well, that is if I move the function, which is on the front panel, for the antenna tuner, out somewhere else, and I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
I gotcha. Interesting. Well, hopefully a solution will come about. This is interesting. I'm going to look more on the MC-47 and also on this tuner issue. It's got me interested. Kenwood is a particularly favorite brand of mine. Although I must confess, in the world before ICOM, it was Kenwood. And lately, it's, I have Kenwood HTs, Kenwood compatible HTs, sort of kind of in the Chinese radios. And then I have, in the larger radios, I still have my ICOM 7000, and then, a bunch of SDRs. Alrighty, I think we should move on. Anything else, Jim?
Oh, that's it.
Howie, you're good?
I am, and I have one more topic to introduce. Can wait till later.
Now I want to get to Rich and Kurt's questions, and I actually have one in there too. So Rich, AC2GI, K2BAR.
K2BAR, AC2GI. Good evening, everybody. The first question is one of etiquette. When logging, if you're going to log a QSO, where we're only going to track one time, do you log the start time or the finish time of the QSO?
Start time. Okay.
That was easy enough. Thank you. And the other question is logbook of the world. And automating that with Ham Radio Deluxe. Does anybody have any experience with that?
Well, why don't we just get someone to talk about how to, deal with logbook in the world? What There's a standard, I think it's an ADIF file that has to be uploaded, you know, with the appropriate magic incantations from the Logbook of the World. I've actually gotten myself set up for Logbook of the World not once but twice, and I've actually never uploaded a QSO. And my credentials have expired yet again, and I get to start all over again. So, is your question how to upload the ADIF file, how to produce the ADIF file, how to set yourself up for Logbook of the World, and then set up then upload the ADIF file? What's your specific question?
No, I am all set up, and I've been uploading to Logbook of the World for quite a while using their 3-step, 4-step process, whatever it is. And I was playing around with HRD with another friend of mine at work, and I'm lucky enough that in our building in Farm Park we have 7 hams over there, so that's nice. And there is a window that allows me to move the manual steps to take my file, digitally sign it, and then upload it, and have HRD do that automatically without having to download your file, load it into the Logbook of the World tool, sign it, and then manually upload it to Logbook of the World. It looks like there's a macro, but I'm not sure of the settings, exactly what you do, and I was just wondering if anybody's ever done that.
Okay, now we got to the root of the question. Anybody have any thoughts on how to make Logbook of the World do this? HRD do this? Alas, I think we are at a disadvantage here.
Okay, back to searching more YouTube videos. They've been kind of helpful up to now. So, all right, back to that. Thank you very much, and hopefully we see a lot of you on Sunday. EC2GI.
Hey, you know, Rich, two questions. What company do you work for? I'm going to be embarrassed if you say it's the same one I work for. That means I forgot. And where do you work, if I may ask?
Siemens in Florham Park, the fire safety division.
Okay. My company, AT&T, has a facility in Florham Park, but they are closing up shop. Are you in that same industrial consumer, you know, commercial park that where the Jets training camp is?
No, we're negative of that. We're on the Livingston border, just on the, if you know where the Snake River crosses Columbia Turnpike, we're in one of the industrial parks there. It would be to the north of Columbia Turnpike and west of Snake River.
Got it. I know where it is. All right, very good. Yeah, we're moving out of that facility. We're dispersing the employees in Farm Park to 3 locations. They may go to Bedminster. They may go to Bedminster. They may go to Middletown, and they may stay virtual. They may go virtual office, whatever meets their needs and the needs of their management. But it's interesting, to say the least, how that's all breaking down. But I'm really looking forward to seeing some of those folks in either of those two facilities. They're great folks, and I partner with them a lot. So you probably get some time over there, or maybe not in your fire safety. You probably don't get over there very much. All right, very good. All right, let's get to Mr. Kurt's question. KD2DKN, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KD2DKN. My question, I think, is going to be easy for you guys. I'm a brand new ham, and an even brander, newer VAR member, and I'm curious as to the auction this weekend. What kind of things get auctioned that kind of determines how much money I'm going to bring, obviously, and whether I'm going to still be welcomed in my home by my wife when I leave there. Back to Ned.
That's a great question. You can probably bid on something for under $10 and northbound to $500. It literally runs the gamut. This auction is, in a word, huge. Huge, huge, huge. The auctioneering starts at 1:30. The buyers come in at 1, and the sellers come in at noon. And those of us who are going to the Chestnut Ridge brunch will come in right at 1:30, I should say. We'll be flying down from Topanga, New York, down to the high school in Westwood or Washington Township. So that should be good. But you will see very nice transceivers. You will see older transceivers. You will see VHF, UHF, HF. You'll see rotators. You'll see stereo gear. You'll see odds and ends. You'll see antennas. You'll see big antennas, which is kind of amazing. I mean, people will bring in, you know, stuff. I remember one year, I thought I remember seeing a couple of Rhone sections come in. I know one year I bought a Yagi, a 2-meter Yagi, like a 13 element, like a 13 B2 or something. So, it's all sorts of things, okay?
That's going to bring in a canoe.
Now, we can't do that anymore. The new guidelines say no canoes unless it's aluminum and you sell it as an aqueous ground plane.
That's great. Thanks for the info. It looks like I'm kind of in the market for a dual band mobile. I'll keep my eye out for it. Thanks for the info. 82DKN, back to the net.
That'd be a good choice to come by. Sure, why not? That's a good thing. All right, thank you for that question. Before we move on, let me just repeat. It's Westwood High School in Washington Township. Sunday, it is, in fact, in place of the Barra meeting, which would be normally on Sunday evening. Vendors or sellers open at noon. Buyers at 1, auctioneering starts at 1:30. There is no admission charge. The club does take a percentage. I don't know what it is, but, you know, whatever it is, it is. And it's all good. Jim, by any chance, do you know how what the auction take is and if there's a limit?
I'm not sure what your question was. What was that?
When we auction, what is the club's percentage and is there a limit?
Yeah, the 10% commission on an item that you sell, so that the seller has to pay that, and the maximum commission for the club is $20, okay, for that item. So if it's a big expensive item, he doesn't have to pay a whole lot. So that's how it works, and everybody's happy with it.
My God, yes. So basically it's 10% up to $200, and then after that it's all to sellers. Very good. That's helpful. Anybody else have any questions about the auction?
This is KD2DKN again. I have a follow-up. Because I've never been to one of these, and if I am looking to purchase a radio, my only concern is getting something that's an expensive paperweight. Does anybody have any tips on how to deal with that fear, and is there a way to test these things out before walking out the door after paying for it?
To grab any one of us and we'll tell you whether or not it's worthwhile to, you know, it would be a decent piece of equipment to have. I mean, short of it being broken and you don't know, but if someone saw something that's broken, then they need to be beaten.
And usually you can ask the seller.
U2REN.
Yeah, I think you're trying to figure out whether or not like it's got PL or memories, things like that. And, yeah, we can help with that. REN, go.
I was curious with the auction, not so much the auction, but has anybody determined when they're going to have the box in May?
I don't think so. You can check the BARA.org website, BARA.org website, and keep an eye on that. It will be on the main page.
Okay, thank you. As a matter of fact, I'm at our club. We're having an auction. I'm going to be selling some Fox Hunt antennas, so if anybody's interested in doing some Fox Hunt, I have the materials and I have the equipment to locate foxes. So that would be at the Sarah, that's Split Rock, on April 20th, this Saturday, at the Senior Center in Roxbury on Elan Avenue, and that's on Saturday also. That's the 20th of April, that's the Saturday.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. Anybody have any other questions about our auction or any other auctions for that matter? All right, everybody. Thank you, Kurt, for your question. Any more, Kurt?
No, I'm good. I'm just, wish me luck about being let back into the house after the auction, because, If I come home with an expensive piece of equipment, that's up in the air, I think.
Well, it's got to work, right? That's half the battle. Honey, at least it works. Okay. Well, number one, my wife's a ham. I've never been able to BS her over anything related to ham radio because she knows where to look. She knows what the stuff costs. I have two bird watt meters. My first one was bought by my wife as a Christmas present, you know, 25 years ago. And I'm a very blessed man for that, to say the least. Totally blown away when that came in the door. With the right slugs, too. That was even more amazing. So it was kind of a neat thing. So, and that was back before you could buy it on the Internet. You know, 25 years ago, you actually had to go places and figure it out. Anyway, very good. I have a question before we get to Howie's, and that is I have been playing with a Flex 1500 receiver, or transceiver, and it's mounted on a chassis with a metal plate with along with the computer that controls it, and it's working fine. On receive, I go to transmit, and it will not transmit. It looks like it's transmitting, but there's no RF out coming out the connector. And I was wondering if anybody had any thoughts as to how this could be.
Shorting your ground.
Well, a short in my ground where?
It's coming through the chassis.
Oh boy, this is going to be a real nuisance if that's the case. Okay. Well, I'll try it because I tested it out before I bolted everything down, and it was working fine. I bolted down and stopped. It doesn't work. I'm just hoping I didn't fry anything in the process because, although they told me I can't fry the finals. I talked to their tech support. They had some rather amusing stories of that. But all right. I will see, but it's very, very frustrating.
And is this thing on spaces?
Again, Don?
You say this PC board's on spaces of some kind off the chassis?
No, I have not done that. I'll have to do that. Everything's bolted to the same common ground plane.
Okay, because I know some of the PC boards I work on, they have spacers, and maybe they, you know, something hanging a little close to the chassis bottom that way. Well, something you have to figure out then, or you can just raise it up a little and see what happens.
All right. Now we'll try it. Very frustrating. Hope I didn't fry anything. This is really, really frustrating. All right. Thank you, Don, for that. Any other comments?
H2AMI.
Tony?
Does it have any kind of antenna switchover relay that's not working? Obviously, receive works, and when you go to transmit, you have to switch over with either solid-state switches or a relay. Have you checked those out?
Well, I hear relays clicking when I press the button on the front of the radio, so, yeah, it's working. I don't think it's, I think there's a relay that's not, I think there's an output relay that's just not happening. You know what I'm saying? I see the RF, I don't see the RF coming out the connector.
Gotta trace it out. Find out where it stops.
My problem is it's an extruded box, it's a little hard to figure that out, but we will figure it out at some point. Alright. Thanks for that. Boy, this is annoying to say the least. Alrighty. Anybody else?
Maybe a bad side of joint.
No, this radio was working before I bolted it to the same chassis. So I'm going to unbolt it and see if that helps. The last one I sent back because it wasn't transmitting anymore. I mean, it was transmitting, but not transmitting out the port. And so something is clearly going on. I'm doing something that's causing it to not work anymore. Which, by the way, is not making me a happy camper, but that's all right. Works fine, I received, and that is the primary application. It's just kind of, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but I brought this, Jim, a couple of weeks back, I brought this GoKit box down with me to the Fairlawn meeting. And got time and I sent it away after I debugged it, and it proved that even decoupling it no longer made it want to transmit, which was, again, very annoying. So I'm going to do the next best thing, and hopefully I haven't fried it this time, and I will retest it with a different power supply, different grounding base, etc. I'll separate everything out and just put it on an insulated port and see if I can get it to work. The good news is I have one more. I will test that autonomously, but I will not integrate it for fear that I'll fry the damn thing. Anyway, at least for my work project, it's fine, but for my other agenda, as it were, it's not so fine, so I got to figure out what's going on. KTBAR. Let me just do this. Let me take Howie's question in a second. I just want to know if there are any other additional check-ins or additional questions for the net that we'll put after Howie's. Please call K2BAR.
K2ZC, Dave, no questions, no comments.
Hi, Dave. Good evening to you as well. Any other stations?
KC2ZMA, Marco. Good evening, Gordon. No questions or comments on mobile.
Coming down 208, oh boy.
No, just up in, actually going through Waldwick, there.
Ah, the other way home. I got it. Anybody else checking into that with or without questions, comments, confusions? Gosh, you know something, Tony? I forgot about your for sale item. K2AMI, K2BAR, I apologize.
Okay, no apology necessary. I almost forgot about it myself. Anyway, I have here a Heathkit SB220 kilowatt amplifier that is in good working order. It's got full output tubes. It's been modified for soft keying and slow start. It's got new power supply capacitors and diodes. And it used to belong to W2ML. It's not mine. We'd like to sell it and send the proceeds to Heidi, who's in Florida at this time. Everything, his equipment, we just wanted to put it in shape so I could send the proceeds to her. I'm going to bring it to the auction. Anybody interested before the auction, contact me with my AARL.net ARL email address. You can get me k2ami@arl.net.
Hey, there were two questions that came up after the net last time. Is it fully functional on all bands? And what is the price?
I'd like to mention the price on the air. It is functional on the bands that it was built for. It does not cover 160, and it doesn't cover the new work bands, but you can tune the new work bands usually.
Okay. All right. I think without a price, Tony, you're going to bring it to the auction. That's my point. I'm trying to help you out here. All right, very good. K2AMI, K2BR. Anybody have any comments for Tony? Very good. And last but not least, any other questions before, any other check-ins before we go to Howie's question? K2EIR, go for it, K2BAR.
Okay, here is K2EIR. Before I actually ask the question that I registered before, let me make a comment about the SDR radio, the Flex. I purchased a while back the Genesis kit for 40. I never finished building it. When I was building it, I obtained a some call it a VISE, but basically it's was a framework for holding up a circuit board. And unaware, because I didn't have much experience with this, I didn't realize that one side of the circuit board was touching the metal contacts with that metal arms that this held the circuit board in place. Now, it was only around the perimeter, but this circuit board had components that went very close up to the edge, and therefore I shorted out things. I still don't know whether I'll be able to get that thing going or not, but I stopped in the middle because I ran out of time, and I haven't been back since. So hopefully, again, if you've got a problem, sometimes it's right at the edge of the board, around, you know, because that's where things get supported and whatever, and so that would be the place to look. Okay, here's the question. I saw a Newsline and I saw a YouTube video that there's a new rig from China for HF, an HF transceiver, being promoted as a maritime rig. It's known as the FT-808. So I'm just curious if anybody's heard anything. I've only seen one video. It was in Italian. It was very dark, but the rig seemed to sound good and work. It covers, I believe, 2 to 30 megahertz. So you can go anywhere. W2TTT from K2EIR.
All right, that's interesting, K2AIR, K2BAR, W2TTT. I'm kind of curious, the model number is vaguely Yaesu-like, that's interesting. Does it have any overtones of Vertex on it? I'm curious. Number one, is it channelized or will it actually tune? And is it kind of like a digital up-down tuning kind of thing, or is it actually got a knob where you spin a knob and you dial up the frequency you want and then save it to memory, or how does it all work? Maritime service usually requires channelized operation.
Well, I remember it has 100 memories. I don't think I saw a knob, and I do believe it does use up-down buttons, so apparently you would have to you know, move up-down till you found where you want it, and then use your memories. I don't know how dynamic it is. Oh, selling price is supposedly about $400. I presume that's $400 US.
Well, 401 would be nice.
Oh, again, FT-808, and yes, I know the FT sounded very Yaesu-like, but we'll have to start doing searches on Google.
It's interesting, certainly interesting. Well, we'll see. We'll see what comes to mind. I'm trying to understand why my radio is resetting. Oh, it's my other radio is resetting. Company's forced a
a security patch on us today. So everybody got our download and reboot. Actually, it's automatically downloaded.